Dr. Finucane, thank you for sitting down to speak with me today about your workshop that you did on classroom discussion. I have four questions to ask you today. The first one being, can you tell me about how you structure discussion in your classroom, and can you comment on the pros and cons of structured discussion?
Probably the most common structured discussion I use is just interacting with the students and asking the class questions for them to respond to, so it's more informal. But when things are not going well, when that doesn't work, I often will have them talk in pairs or threes for like just a minute or two and get whatever question I've asked, get it started that way, sort of prime the pump. And then that often will lead them back into the larger discussion where they'll say some of the things that they were talking about just as pairs. For more structured stuff, I have a couple of exercises where I actually break them into groups and have very specific questions that the groups are supposed to ask themselves, and then they're supposed to prepare questions to ask the other groups. So that sort of it's highly structured. It sort of forces them to discuss as a small group. It also really forces them to have a discussion as a larger group too. And even though it's more artificial, it almost always leads into a genuine discussion where they're interested in the content of the questions and they work with that stuff. And so the structure kind of falls off. And I think that's the goal. You want the structure to get them started, but then you want the content of whatever you're working on to kind of pull them then into dealing with that.
In your workshop, you had the students get into groups, and not necessarily a viewpoint that they...
Right.
That they agreed with, but how do you use that?
Yeah, one thing it does is it helps them assimilate new material that they're usually working on already. It's not material I usually throw in there cold for a group structured discussion like that, but it helps them to use it actively, and then it also, like being in the debate team or something, would ask them to take on a point of view that wasn't necessarily their own, which will make them understand their own better, but also understand sort of the meta process of debate, so that they see what a good argument is, not just a good argument for their own case, but they can learn to think better. So I think pushing them into a point of view and sort of taking it on as if it was theirs, that does a couple of things. It does the content of the whatever we're working on, but it also just helps their style of argumentation, I think, to be some more sophisticated.
What are the top, you kind of spoke to this when you were talking about think, pair, share, sort of what you're saying. Are there any other techniques that you use to facilitate discussion?
I guess the one that I use a lot is just Socratic method, trying to think of questions beforehand, and often preparing for a session, I'll have stuff written down, and sometimes it's just material I've used enough in the past, so I have the questions in my head. But I'll try to pull students as a whole into the content of the discussion with the Socratic method. And what the negative on that is sometimes it ends up just being a series of dialogues with me, and students don't talk to each other. And the best discussion is when the Socratic method leads to an interaction with the students, and that happens if the material is rich enough and if the students are interested enough. So that's the I think that's the ideal way, is to go in there and just have them start sort of be engaged enough in the stuff so that it starts out with me posing questions, but then as they answer the questions differently, they start talking to each other about it. So, well, why'd you say that? Or I don't agree with that. And so that allows me to sort of be on the edge of that, shaping it, but they're really having the discussion. That's the trick, I think, if you get that going. It doesn't happen all the time, certainly, but that's when you know things are cooking. That's when you got, them really kind of forgetting they're having a discussion and they're actually caring about what they're talking about. So
do you have, if it doesn't naturally facilitate into like a great discussion, do you have any backup methods to move the class along?
You know, if I have a class that's really, like, typically bombing, this group is not a discussing group. There are some other ways that can do that over the course of a course. Something else I use is brainstorming, and I'll have, there's a couple topics, like in my marriage course, the topic of cohabitation is a good one to do this with. I'll just have them generate a couple of lists of advantages and disadvantages. So whatever you think about the topic, you'll have something to say. It's kind of either be an advantage or a disadvantage. It's a, you know, it's an interesting enough topic where people aren't going to just be without an opinion. So that gets them going. Another thing is the share pairs, but another thing is, I think sometimes you have to be confident enough in your classroom to wait them out. And you might just have a group that's heavy with introverted types, you know, the Myers-Briggs universe. They're just not going to be the first ones to talk. So you just wait. And that's an effective teaching. So I think sometimes people are uncomfortable with that, but I'll just smile at them and stand there and say, you know, what do you think about it? You know, or whatever, just to keep the idea that silence is okay, but that eventually we'd like some conversation. So sometimes I'll use a little humor or something like that too. But that can sometimes get the people who are thinking deeply but not more apt to talk to get involved. And so I think just waiting sometimes is a good idea too.
What do you think is a good amount of time to wait? Because I know it can seem like...
It can seem like it's
5 minutes,
right?
It's been 5 seconds.
Exactly.
Right.
You know what? I've never timed it. That would be good. I should sit there with a stopwatch, and that would really mess with their minds. I think I have sort of instincts for it, and it's actually probably supposed to be a little uncomfortable for them, and then they'll want to fill the silence. And sometimes you can have a problem with that. If you have people that just have a really short comfort level with how much silence they can take, they'll jump in, you know, and the same people will always talk, and then you have to say, well, you know, have we heard from some other people here? And then you sort of invite those people to not talk. But I don't know, time-wise. It would certainly be several seconds. It would probably be until people were a little bit sensing that time had passed. But I really do think it's important to let them know that that's okay. That, you know, thinking sometimes takes time, you know, and sometimes I'll just let a discussion go then. I'll say, okay, well, why don't you guys just think about that one, and maybe we'll come back to it, and then I'll go on to something else and see if that works. So, but it's okay to have that sort of reflective stuff too.
Okay. In your workshop, you spoke a little bit about discussion early in the semester versus doing discussions later in the semester. So can you tell me what the difference is for you? How do you facilitate it when you're early in the semester versus later?
I think in dealing with topics, like the one in the workshop was on science and religion, and that can get into people's personal points of view, as certainly other topics in theology can. Topics that are more sensitive, I would put later in the semester. I think each classroom has a sort of a feel to it, a certain style to it, and you have a level of comfort and trust that you develop. And I think to deal with certain topics, you have to have that in place. Mm-hmm. So, like in my marriage course, I have a whole large section on sexual morality, which can have some controversial topics in it. Mm-hmm. And that comes in the second half of the course always. I'm going to have the class already discussing stuff, trusting each other. You know, not everybody's going to hold hands and sing kumbaya,
sure.
But you got a certain level of expectation in the class that's okay to talk about stuff. I also think you get there by what you do in the first part of the semester, and that's largely me. The professor has to develop a sense of interaction and trust with students too. And then they will develop that with each other. I think I have to set the tone in the classroom for how I react to people. If somebody says something, I don't know, I can't think of an example, something outlandish, you know. The way I handle that, the way I respond to them, says that it was okay for them to do that. And that is not going to, it certainly wouldn't be laughed at, but it also would be processed in some way so that you have... anybody's contribution can genuinely push the topic along. And so part of the stuff that you do is you have to prepare your own mind about the topic. You have to really know your stuff before you go, and you have to know where it can go. You can have to know where some of the twists and turns are so you're not thrown by it. if you are, then you say, wow, I've never thought about that before, and you let that be part of the discussion. But I really think that professor sets a tone for how students are going to interact and how they're going to be willing to talk about stuff, whether I can respond to them well. And then you also are modeling the kind of responses you want students to have. Mm-hmm. So you sort of teach them how to do that. I think in terms of actual sort of structured strategies, I probably use more brainstorming in the early part of the semester because that's more freewheeling and sort of has two distinct levels to it. One is just getting stuff out. You know, brainstorming is where you just generate ideas and you mm-hmm. fill them up on the blackboard, and then you go back and process that stuff. So you sort of distinguish the response, just sort of raw response stuff, and then the processing of it. So eventually those things come together in other topics so that people are thinking and processing.
Okay. The last question I have is, if you find the class is in a heated discussion, how do you diffuse the tension that sometimes arises with that?
Some tension is good. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's getting to where people are going to, and I don't think I've ever had that where people were genuinely insulting each other, maybe pushing each other. You have to read how people are reacting to it, and if it's a healthy tension, then you let it go. You let it continue mm-hmm. To further discussion, and then you have the responsibility to sort of wrap things up and and bring it together. But if people are getting to where there's, you know, ad hominem attacks or something like that, then I think you have to say something directly about it. Say, you know, we're really not going to get anywhere doing that. Mm-hmm. And depending on what has been said, try and zero in on the content of that and say, you know, maybe what you're trying to get at is this. You know, can we move the discussion there? Mm-hmm. Probably more often what happens to screw up a discussion is that a couple of people will dominate it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll have a class where just a couple of people are always going to think they have the insight every day. You might even have to say to somebody outside of class, you see, you know, like, I really appreciate that you've gotten a lot of discussion started, but there's some people I haven't heard from, so I don't know, maybe you can time your... You don't want to say don't come in and talk anymore.
Right.
But you want to say maybe you can kind of keep your eye on that and letting some other people start the discussion. And mm-hmm. then you'll still have some stuff to say, but it seems like we're not getting enough other participation, so I want that to happen too.
Mm-hmm.
So, and people are, I think, sometimes they're not even aware they're doing it, you know.
Right.
So you just ask them about it, you know.
Do you have any tips for kind of pulling in the quieter students?
Yeah, I tend not to call on people that are trying to hide,
mm-hmm.
Just because I think that there could be reasons, you know, they're just, you know, some people are better in writing or something.
Mm-hmm.
I will do it sometimes, especially if I know it's like from a reflection paper or something, that there are things that they have to contribute that are really good. I'll also try to talk to people like that outside of class and mm-hmm. just say, you know, I just really think what you had to offer when you and I talked was really good. You know, maybe you could mention that to the class. I know other people are thinking that too, and you could get something going on that. But I think you can sort of deal individually with people and kind of nudge them into the larger pool. But I also think people seek their own level in a course.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not necessarily always talking in class that makes for good participation. And I know people differ on that. And there are techniques to do it. I know people that will use really short response papers that people will come in with every week or every day, sort of good faith efforts about their readings. And a good technique to use then is to say, okay, turn those in, and you just check that they did them. You mm-hmm. don't have to a lot of grading or anything. But then you can start a discussion with that and say, in the papers you wrote today, what did you have, you know, and some people will just go up and down the row and say, you know, let's get everybody involved in this. My own approach to getting quiet people involved would be more through like the pairs
mm-hmm.
and getting them comfortable talking to a smaller group.
Sure.
or even in small groups, and then that may bring them out more gradually and I think more naturally into a larger discussion.
Well, thank you for taking the time to sit down with me today, and thank you for your contribution to the Certificate in University Teaching Skills program.
Thank you. I was honored to be asked.